aren't some people really good at creating plays and then they shit the bed when they actually are the shooting guard? Do you like my mixed sports metaphors?
It kind of works.
Hello and welcome to the 538 Politics Podcast. I'm Galen Druk, and it is time for some announcement music. If you are listening to this podcast, it means that former Vice President Joe Biden has announced his candidacy for president. He brings the tally of Democrats running for president to somewhere between 18 and 20, depending on how you're counting. And I say if you're listening to this podcast, because we're recording this podcast on Wednesday with the expectation that former Vice President Joe Biden will announce on Thursday. Who knows? Maybe this podcast will be lost to time, but I doubt it. So let's get into why Biden will or won't be the next Democratic nominee. And here with me to do that, our editor-in-chief, Nate Silver. How's it going?
Good. So the piece that you all read on the site this morning, which is not yet done, is being written by me right now and will have to be edited by angry editors at probably some hour in the evening or early morning. And so I'm very embedded in the mindset of like why Biden will or won't run.
All right. Thank you for that little peek behind the curtain right there. Also with us is senior politics writer Claire Malone. How's it going?
Hey, Galen.
Hey. And also with us is Perry Bacon Jr., senior writer. How are you, Perry?
I'm great. How are you, Galen?
Doing well. Let's dive into this. And as Nate said, he is responsible for writing Joe Biden's theory of the case for the website. So let's begin with you, Nate. And before we get into specifically why he will or won't win, let's place him in the Democratic Party. What is his ideological policy background?
Well, there are kind of two ways to answer it, and the way you answer it will very much affect the way he runs his campaign and what his chances are.
Right? Give it to us.
One way to see him is as a unifying candidate that carries forward kind of Barack Obama's legacy of the party. And it's a party that is largely about African-American and white Democrats. It's a party that is not super far to the left, but is kind of liberal or neoliberal and is kind of more aware on maybe social issues and economics. There's, you know, believe in the welfare state, whatever else, but they're not in Bernie territory. It's a party that heavily emphasizes electability in the Midwest. It's a party where party elites and the establishment still gets what it wants most of the time, right? That's kind of the party that Biden wants it to be. The alternative is that the Democratic Party is fractured.
Wait, are you describing what the Democratic Party is or who Joe Biden is?
Well, I think those are tied together.
Joe Biden is the Democratic Party?
That's deep, man.
The alternative is that the party is fractured and or has moved in different directions from 4 and 8 and 12 years ago when Biden was first on the ticket as vice president. But that would say that given where the party is now, that Biden represents older, more moderate voters. If you look at voters who are baby boomers or older and who say they're moderate or conservative, it's about a quarter of the electorate. And not coincidentally, Biden has about a quarter of the vote, maybe 30% in polls. So it is, by the way, for the time being, Biden's coalition is multi-ethnic, where he actually does better with black voters than with white voters in some polls, maybe a little worse with Hispanics, but not bad. So he doesn't just get white voters, which is kind of a problem for like Mayor Pete or something. But I think, is he a factional candidate or is he a consensus candidate is a big debate, because if he's a consensus candidate, they tend to win. If he's factional, then actually he has some of the same problems that Bernie Sanders might have, for example.
All right. Well, we'll get a lot more into that throughout this conversation. But it's interesting that you say who Joe Biden is kind of depends on how you view the Democratic Party. Claire and Perry, do you agree with that assessment of who Joe Biden is and where he fits into the party?
It's an interesting framework, not just about Joe Biden, but about Joe Biden will tell us where the Democratic Party actually is. Because if you're on staff at 538 or if you listen to this podcast, you probably pay a little bit more attention to politics than a lot of Americans. And if you've been paying attention to politics in the last couple of years, there have been a lot of movements on the left that have gotten a lot of attention. AOC, Democratic Socialists. Bernie was right. We should have voted for him. He could have beaten Trump. Those kinds of sentiments you know, some people might call them overcorrecting for 2016, whatever. But there's been a lot of ideas. Like, if the Democratic Party is an ideas meeting where there are no bad ideas, that's kind of been like the political world for the past couple of years. And I think Biden entering the race is kind of this, okay, but what do your parents think? Right. And or what do your grandparents, or what does your aunt think? And maybe they agree with some of the big ideas in the ideas meeting. Or maybe they say, I don't know if it ain't broke. So that's kind of, to me, Biden, I think Nate's framework is right, which is like Biden kind of tests the how many of the ideas are going to catch on versus like, all right, if it ain't broke, let's go with Biden.
That's interesting. Perry, where do you come down on this?
So the clear case is, like Nate and Claire are saying, is that Biden, at least right now, has more support with Democrats that call themselves moderate or conservative than those that call themselves liberal. And that he has more support among Democrats who are over 50 than under 50 in pretty much all the polls. So that tells you something about kind of where his support, at least right now, might come from. You know, I think of it as sort of the wokeness divide, for lack of a better word to describe that. And then in terms of like where the party is, the Democratic majority in Congress compared to 2009, the one in the House now, has many more minorities and many more women. So in that sense, Joe Biden is kind of out of step where the party is going a little bit in terms of just purely like maybe that, you know, you expect the party that's getting more diverse to go in that direction. But in terms of like policy and ideology, there's a very clear split between kind of the more left people, Elizabeth Warren, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, people like that, versus people who are more center left. I think Nancy Pelosi, Joe Biden, that ideological split, I think, will be very interesting to watch, because I'll be curious to see, like Joe Biden announces on Thursday, what is his exact phrasing of his healthcare position? That's what I'm curious about seeing. I think I know what it is, but I'll be curious to see how he frames it.
Wait, what do you think it is? Just to get that on the record.
So I suspect it's something like, I'm for allowing people who want to get into Medicare the ability to do so. I am not for Medicare for all necessarily, and I'm certainly not for a single payer.
So the public option.
That's not exactly what a public option is. Let's not use that phrase, a little bit fraught, but it's certainly not like Medicare for all in the way Bernie Sanders is talking about.
One thing I'm kind of curious about for when Biden gets in the race, you know, so many of these, say, CNN town halls or the gaggles that people have with candidates after their events, they'll ask them structural questions about democracy, i.e., should we abolish the Electoral College? You know, should we pack the Supreme Court? And then you get into other questions, like pretty hot button questions of, do you support reparations? Do you support giving felons the right to vote? And I'm curious about how Biden answers those. I think I have a decent idea of how he does.
Which is?
I think he's probably going to take the track of, like, let's not futz with this stuff too much, right?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious to see whether or not voters would be like, yeah, I don't really want to deal with that stuff either. I want to beat Donald Trump. Stop asking these annoying questions. Because again, to go back to my first thing I said, which was, there have been a lot of ideas in this idea meeting for the past 2 years about the Democratic Party, and a lot of them are getting thrown around in CNN town halls. And you see someone like, for instance, Harris having to kind of walk back her sort of vague answer about felon voting. Joe Biden, I'm guessing, has a pretty clear answer about that stuff. And sort of I'm curious to see how that reverberates within like the news cycle, within moderate voters being like, yeah, I agree with him. Don't touch that.
I mean, he's not trying to be the most woke candidate.
Right. Right.
He's not trying to be the policy candidate.
He's just trying to be Joe.
Just trying to be Joe. And I think the campaign's theory of the case is that this policy stuff does not matter as much as the personal qualities of a candidate. So if someone's seen as honest and authentic is a very loaded term, but like a term I think Biden would apply to himself probably.
That's a roundabout way of saying that somebody's authentic. It's a term that Biden would probably apply to himself.
No, I think, he does come across.
Nate, do you think you're authentic?
I don't know. Yes.
Nate is authentic.
One thing.
Nate is authentic.
Okay, thank y'all.
So let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. And Nate, you kind of framed the question as, is Joe Biden a consensus candidate or is he a factional candidate? So maybe we'll keep that in mind as we're going through this. But give us the case for why he will win the Democratic nomination.
Because he's ahead in the polls.
All right, done. That's a wrap.
No, okay.
Thank you, Nate. Thank you, Claire.
So Biden's polling at 28% in an average of national polls, 25% in Iowa. you know, if you want to round up to 30, that's a pretty decent number, where historically candidates who are polling at 30% of the stage wind up winning about 1 in 3 times, which is obviously means you lose 2 out of 3 times.
And we've done that math. We know that.
It's not a gigantic sample, but going back to nomination process since 1972. And that's if you have high name recognition. If you were to have lower name recognition and polling that well, then you're obviously really strong, right? So there is a fairly significant gap between Biden and anyone else in the polls. People that are lumping Biden and Bernie together are like not being very careful, because Bernie's at 20 and Biden's at 28, and empirically it's a pretty relevant distinction. Secondly, like, we are talking about someone who was the vice president for 8 years. And so a lot of concerns that might affect voter perceptions of other candidates are not going to weigh in with Biden, because voters are like, he was the vice president for 8 years under Obama. I know him. I trust him. I have a lot of information about him. How bad can it possibly be? And by the way, when former vice presidents seek their party's nomination, since World War II, they have succeeded in winning that nomination 6 out of 9 times. So being a VP is a very formidable credential. He has among the highest favorability ratings in the field, which would suggest that it's not just about name recognition. He, by the way, survived fairly well in the polls, this initial news cycle about him being, as I call it, handsy, but inappropriate touching toward women. He is viewed as electable, so he does the best of any Democrat right now in polls against Trump. Is that a meaningful indicator? Short answer, no. To be honest. However, it is a good talking point, and for lots of reasons, voters think he's more electable.
So here's the question I want to ask, which is, we have all this polling. People have an idea of who Joe Biden is in their heads. But kind of my big question, I think the big question of him getting in the race is, do Democratic voters have this almost like, do they have the manic pixie dream girl vision of Biden in their heads, right? The perfect candidate, the one that you've manufactured in your mind as the pinnacle, the one who can do it. But the big question is, what's the reality of Biden in a 2019 race?
Well, look, I think honestly, one important thing with Biden is like the people who support Biden are not the people that are hip and cool and that journalists are going to run concurrently with in their social circles, right? You know, I have this long piece. We'll see how much the editors chop it down and all the strengths and weaknesses. You know, one thing that I do not think is a weakness for Biden, I don't think the fact that he's not far left enough is a major detrimental reason for him, because half of Democrats say they're moderate or centrist.
Yeah,
his support comes from older Democrats. It comes from
I guess what I was trying to say there is like, yeah, some of it is. I wasn't even necessarily thinking about how the younger Democrats will react to. I guess it's twofold, right? It's A, will the Biden supporters, who are those older moderate Democrats, still kind of like what he has to say as an older guy out on the campaign trail, given the fact that there are other younger, moderate white men, let's say, options to have them. So it's in some ways competing against those other moderate white guys. But then I guess to take, I wasn't even thinking about this, but to take Nate's point of, yeah, Biden's not going to be appealing to like media types or the social groups of media types. How much do we think that that will play into the initial image launch of Biden, which is to say, how will adverse opinions by people on television or people writing for national newspapers, how might that play into Biden's launch?
I think the campaign expects to receive pretty critical media coverage and for that to be probably a theme throughout the primary. And so you can say, like, on the one hand, that actually I think the media is a little bit out to lunch on some of this stuff and they underestimate how older, less college-educated Democrats feel and how many of them actually are not super left on certain issues, at least. But I do think the drip, drip, drip of constant negative media coverage can be impactful. I think it was impactful for Hillary Clinton in 2016, and I think Biden will track similar coverage where he's a boring story because he is the front runner. Sanders sort of is too, but Sanders inherently is kind of like an underdog, and right. Biden doesn't have that. You know, maybe they can try and harness some of that as like a backlash, but that's easy for a Republican candidate to do and hard for a Democrat to say, oh, the media is treating me unfairly. Democrats don't tend to make that accusation because they're pro-journalism and whatever, and Democrats don't tend to latch onto it when their candidates do make it.
We've commented several times now about how the Democratic Party is perhaps more moderate than it might have seemed over the past couple years, or how the media might portray it. Perry, I know that you've done a decent amount of work looking into the makeups of the two parties and how they run against some of our assumptions. What does the Democratic Party look like today, and what do you think that means for Biden's chances?
I think, as Nate was saying, if you look at the Pew data on the Republican Party, for example, like, most Republicans are conservative. I think it's like 70% consider themselves conservative, something like 30% consider themselves either liberal or moderate. Whereas in the Democratic Party, it's much more even. It's about 50 to liberal, 50 moderate conservatives. You know, there's been all these pieces saying Twitter is not real life. That's true, but Congress is way more white and rich than real life too. So there are very few microcosms of real life. That said, the loudest voices in the Democratic Party are on Twitter are probably to the left of where Joe Biden is. But I did a piece early in the year that looks at like the moderate Democratic vote. And I think one thing to emphasize about Biden is different than Amy Klobuchar, for example. The moderate vote in the Democratic Party is about 40% non-white. So it's not just Michael Bloomberg style, like, you know, socially liberal, economic conservative moderates. Some of the moderates are people in West Virginia who are probably more culturally conservative and economically liberal, or who are probably not super well off, not sort of the suburbanite you think of as moderate. Minorities obviously have different politics. The fact that Joe Biden is doing with moderates to me is not necessarily just a sign of him being sort of centrist on policy. I think it tells you something about the fact that he has been vice president. He was vice president for Barack Obama, the first black president. He spent a lot of time campaigning in black communities in 2008 and 2012. He's not just the electable white guy. He starts off with more than that, with a much broader base of the party ideologically and demographically.
Oftentimes when we talk about Biden's electoral strengths, we talk about how he was the vice president for the first black president of the United States. What does the polling show us about how successful he is with African-American voters? And do we expect him to suffer at all, as perhaps Kamala Harris or Cory Booker spend more time on the trail, are in the debates? Like, there are obviously two high-profile black candidates in the presidential race. Does that change the math at all as we move further into the calendar?
So I think the Morning Consult data suggests that up to now he's in the 30s with African Americans. So he's higher than Harris and Booker are in, you know, below 10% or in the teens. Sanders is doing pretty well too. But so Biden is doing, I think, better with black voters than white voters in some of the surveys I've seen, actually. And that may be some function of name ID, but I think it's something else going on too there. What I would say is that, and that's helpful because you have all these states in the South, South Carolina, for example. And what I would say was, like, when I think about the first 3 months of this campaign, if you're Beto O'Rourke in particular, and if you're Cory Booker and you're Kamala Harris, I would say you have to look at the first 3 months as a failing of some sort. That the kinds of voters who are left but not super left, and, you know, white and black, who might find you appealing, so far have kind of stuck with Biden, not embraced you. It's hard for me to see Biden running if Harris, Booker, or Beto was at 20 or 25. And so to me, it suggests I think it's a double-edged sword. Biden is doing well early on, but I do think a really strong Kamala Harris or Booker campaign, I think if those candidacies are the best versions of themselves, it's hard for me. I think they might end up doing better with black voters than Joe Biden. Those are, electing the first black female president would be a important calling card. Similarly, if Beto or Mayor Pete does, you know, continues to grow, do really well, I do think some of these more moderate Democrats may look at them and be like, well, if Beto or Mayor Pete seem electable too, we'd rather have somebody a little bit more exciting than a 70-year-old.
Look, I do think, like, narrowly among African-Americans, I think there is some expectation with this campaign that Harris and Booker will gain ground, but that Biden will hold his own. But, like, that could cost him a couple of points. I mean, like, what would worry me more if I were Biden, and you can read the long version of this in the piece, is right now he benefits a lot from perceptions that he is electable. I wonder if, as Democrats get to know the other candidates better, whether that advantage will abate. And they'll say, you know what? I initially had concerns, as voters do, about whether Elizabeth Warren was electable. However, now I've seen these people endorse her, and I've seen her do well in these debates, and maybe now her polling against Trump is a little better because she's better known, and, oh, she just did well in Iowa. You know, same with Mayor Pete. Oh, I'm not really sure if a gay guy could be elected president, but now I see other people voting for him. So I wonder if, like, Biden's numbers, like, electability is an advantage, but I wonder if his numbers are a little bit inflated by that. And I wonder if there's a phenomenon where
big
BCE, where we look at all these men who are doing well in the field, we're wondering why the women aren't doing better, and there are a lot of answers to that, but one resolution to it could be that in the end, actually, the men lose ground as a group, and the women gain ground because the party is 60% women, and Biden would be one of the candidates who would be hurt by that, obviously.
Let's continue this conversation in just a moment, but first let me tell you that today's podcast is brought to you by Quip. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth, yet most of us don't do it properly. That's why Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. Quip has sensitive sonic vibrations that are gentle enough on your sensitive gums, plus a built-in 2-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides, helping guide a full and even clean. Up to 90% of us don't bother brushing for a full 2 minutes, or don't clean evenly. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. Plus, they're backed by over 2,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/538 right now, you can get your first refill pack for free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip, getquip.com/538. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Applying for a loan is a lot like applying for a job that you don't get to interview for. Instead, loan companies make their decisions based off your credit score and history without getting to know the whole you. Now, thanks to Upstart.com, it never has to be that way again. Upstart is revolutionizing the way you borrow money by rewarding you for your job experience and education in the form of a smarter interest rate. Unlike traditional credit underwriting, which could be biased against people with a short credit history, Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. The best part, once your loan is approved, the funds will be transferred to you the very next business day. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, or to make a large purchase. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/politics. All right, we're back. We talked about some of Biden's strengths. I want to talk a little bit more about his weaknesses and actually pick up on where you left off, Nate, in terms of the electability argument. Can we quantify how much of his advantage is based off of the fact that voters perceive him as electable?
Quinnipiac did a poll in California where they asked Democrats, who do you like overall? And they asked them, who do you think is most electable and who do you like the most on policy? So on the question of electability, 35% of Democrats thought Biden was most electable. On the question of policy, 13%, 1-3, thought he had the best policy positions. You average those together and you wind up kind of where he wound up at 26% saying that he was their top choice. So the question is, what if like those electability numbers erode? Then maybe all of a sudden he's at 19 instead of 26 and 19. Then you're kind of in a territory where you are more of a factional candidate where someone else can like leapfrog you potentially. And so I think like there is a good argument that those electability numbers are more likely to decline than to improve. By the way, Obama in 2008 initially was seen as much less electable than Hillary Clinton. A variety of things happened, including polling, that showed Obama doing as well as Clinton against McCain or better to reverse those perceptions, including things like Ted Kennedy endorsing Obama, all these things, right? And so what you worry about if you're Biden is that you're starting at 30, and 30 is pretty good, but it's not that high.
Electability is a reason to run for president, but it's not necessarily a perfect one. I mean, a campaign sort of designed around electability is kind of designed about a sort of a process part. I know voters care about that. I know the data shows they care about them. It has a little bit of a process element to it. It has a little bit of a, you'll be vulnerable to charges. You don't have much to say. I actually am very curious what Biden has to say on issues. Does he have some kind of vision of the country, for the country or not? Like if you, whatever, like Mayor Pete is not a policy candidate, but Mayor Pete does have a certain vision and presentation. He is saying something. Senator Warren and Sanders are policy candidates. You know, Kamala Harris and Booker sort of are a little bit harder to place with. They have something to say. I do think one weakness for Biden is running a campaign that I am the best candidate because other people will vote for me. If the other candidates do well and actually present more compelling arguments and seem more electable, that becomes a problem because these few months, in part you're seeing this from Biden's staff. I can tell in the reporting there's some dissension in Biden's staff about where they should announce the campaign, how it should go. And I think that goes to the questions that Hillary had in 2016 about a little bit, which is like, You're running because you would like to be president. You've long planned to be president. You are polling well. Those are all good things, but that may not sort of give a good structure to your campaign or a good reason for people to be inspired and excited to vote for you. Like, I'll be curious who moves to Iowa to work for Biden. Who are his grassroots people? Who is killing themselves to make sure he wins? Because that's kind of my core question is, like, what is this campaign about besides electability?
So we were talking about the electability numbers possibly being an early advantage that could erode. The other question I've heard a lot about Biden's, like, potential vulnerabilities down the road, even though he seems strong right now, is name recognition. So are his polling numbers propped up at the moment based on the fact that he has universal name recognition, or is he popular in his own right beyond that?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of a red herring. Candidates who have high name recognition don't tend to lose ground so much as that candidates with low recognition tend to gain ground. And so it's a problem for all the Democratic candidates, but especially Biden and Sanders, that, like, on a name recognition adjusted basis, that Pete Buttigieg is actually pretty close, at least to Bernie now, that he gets about 10% support with 50% name recognition. Bernie gets 20% support with 100% name recognition. It's actually kind of not clear who is polling better in that sense. Biden is at 30% or 28%, which is a little higher than that still. But no, I think, look, he was vice president for 8 years again, right? And he was not some tokenish vice president. He's someone who Democrats had very favorable and very deep feelings about. And I think that is, like, more robust than people might assume.
Who has big candidate energy to compete with Biden? This is an open question.
I got the sense that if anyone they might be worried about right now, and this is going to be very April 25th, 2019. Right now, they may be the most worried about Mayor Pete, because he is, at this point, probably polling the best out of anyone. And he's in their lane a little bit as far as, I mean, Biden's not from the Midwest per se. He's kind of a quasi-Midwesterner, right? But he's in their lane a little bit as far as someone who's trying to reach out and be the reasonable guy. You know, I think they probably assume in South Carolina that Kamala Harris and Booker are potentially big problems. I think they, for now, are helped by the fact that neither Klobuchar or, frankly, Beto at this point got off to a great start. However, both Klobuchar and Beto are pretty explicitly in, like, the Iowa lane, and I think Biden really needs to do well in Iowa. I think if the problem, if Biden doesn't win Iowa, then someone else does. And if that someone else is a Klobuchar or a Mayor Pete or a Bernie, I mean, you can play out Beto, you can play out or Booker, play out any one of those scenarios, and in any one of those scenarios, all of a sudden that person is probably ahead of Biden. Conversely, they're kind of probably perfectly happy to have Bernie doing well. If Bernie is at 20% or 22% or whatever, then that means that there's not as much of the vote to go divided between the other candidates. And although I didn't talk to the campaign about this, this is just now Nate's opinion, you know, I do think if it somehow became a one-on-one between Biden and Bernie, I think Biden would feel pretty comfortable that he would win that, probably. Yeah. It's also hard in some sense to imagine that happening, because they have, like, when you go through and you can read the article and look at all these negatives of Biden, like, Bernie has, like, a lot of these negatives.
Which brings us to actually the other vulnerability I wanted to bring up, which is age, right?
Yeah.
So Joe Biden is 76 right now, would be 78 if elected president when he took office. We know that voters have feelings about elderly presidential candidates. How much of a vulnerability is that for him?
I think it could be a huge vulnerability. NBC did a poll a while ago where they asked voters, what do you think about someone over the age of 75? How concerned would you be about nominating someone like that? And 62% of general election voters said they had reservations about voting for someone who's 75 or older. That's twice as many as who would have reservations about voting for a gay candidate, four times as many as would have reservations about a woman candidate, and whatever else, right? And so,
and it's worth
mentioning,
until
we've had the news cycle where there's some health scare or Booker or Mayor Pete say something about their age and there's a little kerfuffle about it, until we've had that news cycle, there's part of me that just thinks that, like, Biden and Bernie could melt on that basis.
I mean,
and that we don't have a lot of good precedent for a candidate this old.
Because Trump is 72, just to get that out there.
Yeah, although we do have some precedent, at least from, like, the health point of view. When John McCain ran for president, he was a cancer survivor who released quite a few health records. People who are, or at least previously, people who are sort of conscious about their health or concerns about their health were preemptive about that. And I'm curious if Biden's team, how much they release health records or how much he's shown doing vital, active things on the trail. I mean, he's obviously a pretty spry guy for his age, fit guy. Spry is a freighted term, isn't it? So I don't know. It's sort of the health question, the older person question is interesting.
Warren is 69. Trump was, what, 69 when he was running? A lot of 69s. McCain was 69 at this point 12 years ago. Biden is 76 and Bernie is 77. They would be as old on the first day of their terms as Donald Trump would be the last day of his second term.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it.
They are old. And to the point where, like, even as a journalist, I didn't realize how old they were. I'm like, oh, they're kind of the same age as Trump. Maybe you're older. You know, they're like 5 years older than Trump.
All right. As we wrap up, I want to bring us back to a question that we posed at the start, which is Joe Biden a consensus or factional candidate? And that probably affects also how he runs.
I mean, you'd obviously prefer to be the consensus candidate, right? But one thing we haven't talked about much is the hallmarks of the consensus candidate is that they have a lot of support from the party. They have a lot of endorsements. They dominate fundraising. I don't think any of those things are going to be true with Biden. We'll see. I mean, he's gotten a few endorsements. He got Andrew Cuomo. He got Dianne Feinstein. Probably a few more by the time you're listening to this. But, like, I think the most likely path is that he tries the consensus lane, finds that the going is tougher than he thinks, and it's rough and tumble, kind of very wide open primary, and begins to kind of lean in or default toward a more combative persona where he's kind of fighting to hold on to his 25%. And he thinks, if I can hold on to my 25% and win Iowa or almost win Iowa and win South Carolina, then people will drop out and I'm close enough to a consensus candidate where I will then win the nomination, right? I'm not sure that will work, you know, and at some point he kind of actually becomes Bernie in the sense of, like, because Bernie's strategy is pretty clearly, I'm going to hold on to my 20 or 25% and find a few other voters here and there. I did get 43% in 2016 and win these early states, and then there's nothing anyone can do about it because they're not going to knock me out if I'm winning Iowa and New Hampshire, right? You know, so Biden is kind of making the same argument as a backup plan, but I don't think that's a great strategy for Bernie, and I think it would not be a great strategy for Biden either, right?
Although it worked for Trump, right?
I think it's a factional party. My guess is, I don't actually know. I am genuinely curious about what Biden does to the race. My guess is the Democratic Party is just a factional party right now, and therefore he will be a factional candidate if he enters the race.
Well, when he enters the race.
Sorry, when.
I know it's still an if when we're recording this podcast, but by the time you're listening to this, it presumably will have happened. And I think we will leave it there. So thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Claire.
Thanks, Galen.
And thank you, Perry.
Thanks, Galen.
And again, we hope to see you in Texas for our live show. We're going to be in Houston on May 8th. Go get tickets at 538.com/live. My name is Galen Druk. Tony Chow is in the control room. You can get in touch by emailing us at podcasts@538.com. You can also, of course, tweet at us with any questions or comments. If you're a fan of the show, leave us a rating or a review in the Apple Podcast Store or tell someone about us. Thanks for listening, and we will see you soon.